Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Alpha of Morsel Flesh by Ben Alderson, narrated by Sean Grindell. 1. 25 years before. Drip, drip, drip. Warm droplets of blood fell across my upturned face. If I closed my eyes, it would have been like looking up into a storm cloud as it unleashed an abundance of rain. But this wasn't rain. Rain was not sticky. Rain did not tack in my eyelashes. Rain did not taste like old copper coins. I pinched my eyes closed, flinching with every drip that splashed against my skin. Drip, drip, drip. I couldn't look away. Mama's eyes were wide and all-seeing above me. Her face was squished into the floorboard that separated us. Dead eyes peered through the gap, bloodshot and discolored. Mama had such pretty eyes, even when they sang of death. Drip, drip, drip. I clamped my hand over my mouth. My mind commanded me to scream, but I couldn't. The dead would hear me. Just as I could hear them sucking, slurping. Papa would have slapped the back of my hand if I ate like that. Smacking one's lips whilst chewing loudly on a meal, it was not good manners. The dead didn't care what noises they made. They had no manners when draining their prey. Drip, drip, drip. As Mama's blood dribbled through my little hands and spread across my lips, I couldn't help but ponder why the dead craved blood with such desperation. The copper tang was vile. My stomach cramped, and I felt as though I would be sick. I wished to spit it out and scream, but I couldn't. No, no. As I stared deep into Mama's eyes, I remembered what she said as she hit me beneath the floor. Keep quiet, Eamon. Don't make a sound. Drip, drip, drip. My skin itched where her blood spread. I wanted to scratch at my face and rub away the gore, but it was the only thing smothering my scent from the vampires. My hair was drenched by it. My eyes were blinded by it. Drip, drip, drip. Where were the Crimson Guard? They would come. They should come and save us. Drip, drip, drip. The blood ran dry by the time the vampires finished drinking from my parents' corpses. So much time passed that the blood no longer bothered me. I was frozen to the spot, looking up through the gap in the floorboards as they creaked with the monster's movement. Drip, drip, drip. One of them boasted about the taste of Mama's blood. Fresh peach, it said. The other thought Papa tasted like vintage wine. I thought they would leave, but they didn't. They were in no rush. No one was coming for them. I recognized the familiar sound of a chair scratching against the floor as they took a seat. Whilst I was hidden beneath the floorboards, covered in Mama's blood, the monsters sat at our family table and laughed with full bellies. Drip, drip, drip. They laughed. Drip, drip, drip. They sang. Drip, drip. I've been hiding for so long. I felt as though my body would never break free of this position. Spiders welcomed me into their domain, crawling over my bare feet and blood-coated face. I used to hate spiders. Now they were my only comfort. Drip. Drip. The monsters leave. Not because the Crimson Guard had come for them, but because dawn had arrived. With the light of day, it ushered them out of my home. Mama watched me. Her skin looked blue. I used to think she had pretty eyes, but now the whites were grey, and the blue looked like it bled out from their circles. Drip. Drip. Light spilled in from above. I lifted my hands before my face. They were not red as expected. It looked as though I dipped my hands in rust. The blood had dried to a flaking brown stain. The Crimson Guard was still not here. Drip. Drip. Night came again. Sick covered my chest and face, mixing with Mama's dried blood. Drip. 3 times the world above the floorboards had brightened with daylight. It was on the 4th day when my saviors came. They came when there was nothing left to save. Drip. I hated them. Drip. Vampires. The Crimson Guard. Drip. They were all monsters. Drip. I hated them. Drip. I. 2. I do love you, Rory Coleman. It's strange how such words hurt far greater than the physical pain left in their wake. Eamon always seemed shocked when he spoke them to me. His piercing sky-blue eyes would glisten with tears of regret. He would look from his hands to the part of my body he'd chosen to mark during his blackout of rage, and whimper as though he was the one with a body riddled with pain. For such a towering, broad man, in those moments, he was more akin to a child looking between their favourite broken toy and the hands that tore it in two. I recognised remorse, I thought, if only for a moment, which made the bitter taste of fault hard to swallow. He never said sorry. No, it seemed Eamon could not allow such a dirty phrase to grace his lips. All of Darkmoor would tell me how kind he was, which made the understanding of why he acted with such ferocity towards me confusing. Kindness caused bruises, broke bones, and drew blood. I couldn't pick up bread from the bakery in town without being told how wonderful Eamon was. Even during my frequent visits to the local medic, they'd remind me about the many great things Eamon had done for them. It was those encounters I found most difficult to hear, when I was forced to lie about how 2 of my fingers even became shattered in the first place. "That is one nasty bruise you've got," Jameson would say, pointing his finger towards my swollen eye. I would smile and exhale the lie with such ease, one would have thought it was rehearsed. The door picked a fight with me and won. Jameson would tut, smile and dismiss it. And no matter how many times I visited or how many ailments I collected across my body, he never questioned me, no matter how ridiculous and fictitious the excuses became. Of course, it was Eamon who left those marks, but I couldn't ever say that, not out loud. And it wasn't because I was scared about what he would do to me. The days of fearing him were long gone. It was what others would say, and how I would be looked at, like a crazed fool for even suggesting Eamon Coleman had such a capacity for evil. No one would ever believe Darkmoor's leader of the Crimson Guard, the man tasked to protect every living creature from the monsters of the world, was that very thing to me. My monster. My devil. My husband. But he loves me, I reminded my reflection, which made sense because love had only ever caused me pain. My fingers had only recently healed, making my movements awkward as I tied the velvet laces of my scarlet cloak around my neck. The splint and cloth bindings had been removed days ago, and I couldn't ignore how skeletal they looked. Thin from the lack of use, like the fictional description of a witch's finger. Fitting, I thought. The thick band of iron and gold spun around my emaciated finger. I hardly spared at a thought before my heart dropped into the pit of my stomach. There was a time, looking at the ring filled my chest with breath, and my mind with the wonders of a future with the man I loved. Now, it simply reminded me of the harsh truth of my reality. "You must be looking forward to getting some fresh air, Rory." I turned my back on the scratched glass mirror to regard Mildred, who stood in the foyer before me. Mildred had been in my life for as long as I could remember. The Coleman residence wouldn't have been the same without her stout, hunched body shuffling across the waxed oak floors. She was part of the furniture, as Father used to explain, which I always disliked, because Mildred was far more than that. She was, to me, the soul of this house, with its countless rooms, all empty as the next. I almost folded in on myself at seeing her again. "Eamon called you back?" I asked, not meaning for my voice to sound as relieved as it did. "He did indeed," she replied, with a smile that tucked the wrinkled corners of her mouth upwards. One thing about Mildred, she had been old for the 27 years of my life. She had the same nest of wiry grey hair, and a face that bore more resemblance to the surface of a melted candle. "Poor soul!" She rushed towards me, waddling like a duck on two of the same feet. "Bedbound for all those days. I almost demanded to be let back in so I could care for you myself. But of course that would not have been necessary, since your darling husband has kept you fed, bathed and rested. Lovely man, that Eamon. You are very lucky to have him." I allowed Mildred to fuss over me, not stopping her as she reached towards the poppy red curl of my hair that fell before my eye. With a motherly brush of her finger, which smelled of pine oil and lemon, she moved it out of the way. At least I knew what excuse Eamon had spread about my imprisonment whilst my fingers had healed. It had been a while since he blamed my absence on an upset stomach, mostly because when he hurt me, the damage was easily concealed. This last time was a lapse in his judgment, one he would likely not allow again. Or would he? "Never mind that," I said, lifting my fingers to her shoulders. They felt like dough in my hands. I wanted her to envelop me in her arms so I could melt into the safety of her motherly aura. "I'm glad you are back. How about I fetch you a tea before you start, and you can update me on all the books you have devoured during your time off?" It was Mildred who had encouraged my love of reading. From when I was a child, she had smuggled books past my mother, and we had discussed the stories in great detail. Reading was an escape, one that we both thirsted for. Mildred waved me off, pushing me with unseen strength towards the main doors at the end of the shadowed foyer. "Go, Rory. Get going with you. Your skin looks as pale as death itself. Some sun might do you well. Bring some of that lovely glow back to those cheeks of yours. If you would wish to entertain an old woman, you could do so tomorrow. But today, I would be happier knowing you are out of this house." "Are you sure?" I asked, almost expecting she would go back on her word. "I'd rather you were not under my feet whilst I caught up on weeks' worth of neglected dust since I last stepped foot inside this house." She drew the feather duster from her belt, unsheathing it like a sword. With a great swing, she clobbered my arm with its soft end. If she noticed me flinch, she didn't mention it. "Go, go, go!" My back thumped against the door. The chill of the autumn breeze slipped through the cracks, tickling across the back of my neck as though seducing me with the promise of the outside. "Will you stay for supper?" I asked, hopeful. "Please say yes. Please say yes." Mildred pulled a face, one that would have been best carved into the expression of a statue in mid-contemplation. "Dearest, I have a feeling I'll be cleaning from now until sunrise tomorrow. Although Eamon wouldn't allow that, would he? Darling man, the moment he walks in that door, he will relieve me of my duties. Such a caring soul." I shook my head, the same pesky curl of red hair falling back into place over my eye. Indeed. A cloud passed behind Mildred's honey-coloured eyes. For a moment, her brows furrowed in wonder, searching for something that my face must have given away without me realising. "Is something bothering you?" she inquired, eyes trailing me from head to foot. "If you are still feeling under the weather, I could see you back in bed, and then I'll rustle up some soup for you." From the pits of my belly, I dredged up a mask to adorn, one that eradicated weakness, an expression which oozed, "I am fine," in abundance. And what? I leave the patrons of St. Myron without a visit from me. How could I possibly deprive them of my presence? After the last couple of weeks, I'm surprised the infirmary stayed afloat without me. Mildred's face cracked into a smile. Only if you're sure. If Eamon thought I sent you on your way whilst still unwell, he would have my guts for garters. He cares greatly for you, you know. I took Mildred in my arms, before she had another moment to contemplate the wince that shattered my mask of strength in two. There would have been a time, years ago, that I buried my face in her forest of silver hair and inhaled the scents that clung to her. I was far too tall for that now. So I rested my chin atop her head and held on tight. It's just so good to have you back, I said. Oh, my darling. She expelled a breath, her concern melting away like butter on a hot spoon. I've missed you too. Over her shoulder, in the distance of my home's entrance, sat the tall standing mirror. I caught my reflection in it. Wide, unblinking eyes stared back at me, with a mouth drawn tight, all exposed by the golden glow which encompassed my hands. Light spilled beneath my splayed fingers as though I held on to a star. A shard of sunlight grasped in my very palm. The magic was cold, like dipping my hands into the bottom of a frozen lake. But there was nothing painful about the light. It was peace. An emotion that reminded me of the sensation of snow falling upon my upturned face. The brushing of flakes as they tickled across my skin, before melting and leaving the icy kiss as a physical memory. My power didn't always feel like this. Sometimes it pained me, stung like the needle of a bee, burned like the wick of a flame on skin, shattered like finger bones beneath a hammer. Go on. Get out of my sight, sappy fool, Mildred cried, pulling away suddenly, drawing me from the sudden, horrific memory. The magic spluttered, winked, and died out, all before she would have noticed anything was amiss. Don't tire yourself out too quickly. A woman of your age shouldn't be overdoing herself, I said, gripping the brass knob of the door with a firm hand. I forgot, for a moment, of my aching fingers. It shot a stab of pain up my arm. I drew blood as I bit down on my tongue to stop myself from yelping. It made hiding my pain easy when Mildred whacked me with her feather duster once again. Cheeky boy, I heard the mellow laugh in her tone. If you were any younger, I would have made you eat soap for such a remark. I yanked the door open, allowing autumn to spill into the foyer with its crisp wind. Leaves, the colour of rust, wine and gold, shot towards and skated across the waxed floor with ease. Mildred barked out a swear word that would have made the drunkest patron of our local tavern look like a saint. Who needs their mouth washing out now? I retorted, skipping out of the threshold before a third smack of her weapon of choice reached me. Mildred's deep rumbling chuckle followed me down the three steps from the door, along the overgrown pathway of shrubs and reaching rose bushes, and out onto Darkmorn's main street. The childish joy it filled me with lasted until the screeching garden gate slammed closed behind me. I hated lying to Mildred. It pained me, but I knew I could never burden her with what truly happened behind the closed doors of my family's home. It would break her, and I needed her whole. Selfishly, if it meant lying kept her laughing and safe, safe from his gaze, then I would keep it up. It wasn't like lying was a new concept between Mildred and me. I had been doing it to her since as long as I first learned to do so much as crawl. Mildred didn't know of my magic. My heritage, beyond being the only son of the founder of Darkmorn's Crimson Guard, was a secret, which, Mother would tell me, was very different to lying. Keeping secrets came from a place of protection, when in reality, I knew otherwise. It was tradition, when I navigated Darkmorn, to glance towards Castle Dread. I found myself drawn to the ominous place, like a moth to a flame. It sprouted in the distance, a dark scar across Darkmorn's landscape and memory. A smudge of gloomy stone, stained glass windows, and the remnants of scaffolding from the recent renovations. Every year, it seemed the castle grew bigger, swelling like the pregnant belly with more halflings imprisoned inside its walls. It was a place my mother swore to keep me from. Eyes down, trained on my scuffed boots, I pulled the red cloak over my head and moved with speed. The sooner I reached St. Myron's infirmary, the better. 3. I remembered the day I was asked to identify the lumps of torn flesh and bone, as though it were yesterday. It wasn't the memory that haunted me, but the way death invaded my senses, how it clung on, refusing to give me any reprieve. It had taken months for the smell of my mother's bloodied corpse to leave me. What a mess! That had been my first thought as Jameson, our family's personal physician and lead practitioner at St. Myron's Infirmary, pulled back the blood-stained sheets and revealed the parts of the body beneath. Then there weren't any other thoughts that followed. Only a mess of grief as the reality of what I looked upon crashed over me. There was a slick, wet sound as the material tugged at ruined flesh, pulling loose bits back with it to expose the hollowed-out insides and the ribbon of guts that dribbled out onto the metal table. I'd vomited down my wedding suit. Over and over, the body expelled the day's joy and festivities. How could the happiest day of my life end in such a way? Anna Coleman, my mother, was laid out on a metal cot with skin of alabaster splattered with gore and grime. Only hours before, my mother had raised a glass to me and my husband. Now she was scattered across a metal table, with her legs beside her, and her chest open and empty of what should have been inside. As I stared down at her, vomit spread down my chin, and tears sliced scars down my cheeks. I wanted Father to be with me, but his mind was already broken, and Jameson feared what would happen to him if he saw his wife like this. Eamon had kept him in the hallway beyond this room. I could still hear him, my father whispering his pride and happiness to Eamon, whilst not knowing where we were and what had happened. My father's mind had not been his own for years by this point. Mother had cared night and day for him. Now she was dead. I feared what would happen. I'd vomited again. My throat burned with the bile conjured from heavy contractions gripping my stomach. Eamon didn't waste any time in convicting a rogue vampire for my mother's brutal murder. Days later, the nameless vampire was hung for all of Darkmoor to see, as he screamed and pleaded his innocence. He hung from the noose, pale neck pinched by thick rope, as we all waited for the sunrise to come and claim him. And the worst part was, I had believed his innocence. I believed the vampire who supposedly tore my dearest mother to shreds because of the blood. There was so much of it. I couldn't understand why a vampire, whose requirement for blood was limited by law, would leave so much wasted. The foyer to my home was covered in it. Hours later, Mother still oozed blood across the metal table in the cellars of St. Myron's Infirmary. To me, it made little sense. I had told Eamon my concerns, and it was the first time he showed me the monster that lurked beneath his perfectly crafted illusion. He had gone from the man who stole my heart to the one that held it in his hands and squeezed as he refused to listen to my disbelief. Eamon said I was blinded by grief, that I was a fool, stupid, pathetic, all because I refused to believe her killer was brought to justice. The vampire was killed anyway. He died, screaming for his innocence, and the case was closed. "Keep going," the sleepy scrap of a girl mumbled from the bed before me. The crack of her tired voice drew me out of the painful memories. I gave in to its siren pull, thankful to be reminded that it was all behind me. "Where did I get to?" I said, tracing my finger across the page of the book resting across my lap. My mind had wandered to old memories, making it hard to locate where I had stopped. The girl, Sally, giggled through a yawn as she watched me struggle. "Is the story boring you to sleep, or are you just that tired?" I asked. Sally did a good job at widening her eyes as she pleaded, "It is the best story ever. It could never bore me." I closed the book as another yawn overcame her. Her milky teeth were stained a blush pink. Even the corners of her little mouth had the remnants of dried blood from her last coughing fit. "Good," I replied. "That is the most precious thing about stories. They wait for you. And this one will not run away. So how about you get some sleep and we can pick up again tomorrow when I come back?" "Will you come back this time?" The question had the power to break me. I leaned forward, chair creaking beneath me. The book became an afterthought as I deposited it on the sheets crumpled beside her. Then I took her hand closest to me, the one that always seemed to reach out when I read to her. "Sally, I promise." She blinked heavily, turning her head to the side until she faced the ceiling instead of me.
"You promised me before, and then you didn't come, and you forgot about me."
Phantom pain speared up my two fingers. It was only a hint of the agony I had felt when Eamon shattered the bones, but it was enough to have me hissing through my teeth. "I could never forget about you, Sally. Never."
"It hurts, you know," Sally said, a jeweled tear rolling down her swollen, colourless cheek. "No one could take the pain away but you. And you left me."
Sally didn't know of my magic, nor did any of the other patients that frequented St. Myron's Infirmary, the ones whose discomfort I softened and pain I blanketed during my visits. If anyone knew, I would have been thrown into Castle Dread, never to help anyone else again. Sometimes that didn't sound like such a bad outcome, to be taken from this life and kept from returning. But that was a selfish wish, one I squandered quickly. "Well," I drew the word out, offering Sally a warm smile, "how about I don't promise you again, since I'm the world's worst promise maker? Instead, I would suggest a contract between me and you, one which legally binds me to return to your side come morning and finish that story you love so much." Sally scrunched her eyes closed. It was her way of pretending she couldn't hear me.
"Contracts?"
I almost chuckled at the way she echoed the word back to me, fumbling over its newness.
"Mummy said they're for old people and vampires, not for me."
She wasn't wrong. I had to give her that. A deal. Sally peeked one eye open and shook her head defiantly, golden hair spilling around her feather-down pillow that propped her up in the bed.
"Okay, then. I suppose there is nothing I can do."
Sally's eyes burst open as a gravelly cough clawed itself out of her throat. Her sudden jolt tore my hand forward, but she didn't let go. Not as the whites of her eyes bulged a dark red, and blood splattered across the sheets before her.
"It's okay, Sally. It's going to be okay."
I opened myself up to Sally's emotions. Taking a deep breath in, my magic roused deep in my core. Like a butterfly cracking out from its cocoon, it awoke in a flurry of spreading wings. I felt her turmoil and pain. It struck me like an arrow into my chest. Claws cut into my lungs, echoing the very agony Sally was currently lost to. This was what I visited St. Myron's for. For this very moment, and the peace I could offer. It made me feel less useless. My being here gave me purpose. I recognized how selfish it was, but still I returned. Because if someone couldn't take away my pain, how all-consuming and haunting it was, then I could at least do it for others. I had been visiting St. Myron since Mother was killed and Father was moved here to be cared for daily. It took a year for his mind to kill him and return him to my mother's side in death. Even without him here to visit, I came anyway. It made me feel closer to him. Sally cried out, gasping for air as the coughing fit subsided for a moment. I sunk the fangs of my magic into her hurt and dragged it out of her like a dog to a bone. Sally's coughing spluttered and calmed. Blood spread across her lips, dribbling down the sides of her mouth as though she was a vampire and had just completed a feed. But it stopped, bursting from her ruined lungs. The disease slowly ate away at her. The small lines on her face melted away. I watched the hint of a smile return to her pink, stained mouth, and even her eyes seemed to widen without effort. Slowly,
As the storm of her pain continued to thrum within me, Sally relaxed. Laying back into the pillow, her eyes drew heavy. I separated her exhaustion from her agony and fed it back to her.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?